Well, I have to tell you that one of my favorite ways to invest time and energy is to be with people like you. I was told that this is the cream of the crop. You are the great leaders of the Christian Church, and seriously an honor to be here. Dale Galloway has been a friend for a long time. I admire and respect him. George Hunter, we've been together a number of times, and as I look at some of the opportunities that you've had to interact with different leaders, this is a remarkable adventure of growth, and I congratulate you and commend you. I'd like to start out by talking about a church experience that I had not long ago, and it doesn't surprise me what I just saw, because the result of experiences like this turn out people who responded like they did to Jay Leno. I had a break this summer and was taking a Sunday to check out another church in a Midwest town. I had been in Iowa for a board meeting. We're starting a college on our new campus. And that Sunday morning, I drove up to the Minneapolis area and spent some time with my sister, and I asked her, where do you recommend I go to church? She said, well, there's a church, I think, that has an outdoor worship expression, and not too far down the road, and just a few blocks away. Why don't you check that out? I said, well, when is that? She said, I think it's 8:30. So I got up early, went out jogging, got my coffee, and started out down the blocks with a cup of coffee, pretty casual. And in fact, I had my shorts on and my summer attire. And as I walked a far distance, there was no church, and she miscalculated. So it was not 8:30 when I arrived at the first structure that was a church. It was much later than that. Nevertheless, it was very humid, very hot. I was sweaty, and looked around the outdoor, the church grounds, and didn't see anybody out there ready to worship or worshiping, which they should have been by now, and went inside, walked up the front steps. There was an usher standing there in a suit and tie with that usher expression, and I said, I'm looking for a church that has an outdoor worship celebration. I see that you don't have that here. He said, no, we don't do that here. And then he followed that with a comment that told me I wasn't welcome. He said, obviously, you're not dressed for church. So I asked the question, is there a church in the area that has an outdoor worship? Maybe I got things mixed up. He said, well, I don't know. There is another church over the hill, and maybe they do that. So started out over the hill. And by now, when I arrived, it was 9 o'clock, and it had no evidence of any kind of worship going on at that particular church, so I had a difficult time finding my way in. I didn't know where the entrance was. In fact, I walked around once. I saw a narrow corridor, and I thought, well, that can't be how you get in. But that was the entrance. So I went inside and saw a sign. It was an enclosed worship space, and there was a sign that said air conditioning. That sounded really good right then. And as I approached the door, there was a church guard in front of that door, standing there, and now I was really smelly and sweaty. And I said, I see that you're having indoor worship. I was told that there's a church in the area that worships outdoors. He said, well, nobody'd be dumb enough to worship outside today. So I thought, well, that's probably a truism. It's 90% humidity and 90 degrees, but I see that they're nice. It's pretty cool and comfortable inside here. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, sir, I'm sorry. I can't let you in. The space is air conditioned, and I can't let any hot air in." Huh. I didn't think he knew me. You know, I thought I was a stranger, but he was serious. I didn't get in. Now, two churches within 15 minutes, within a 15-minute time period, I was not welcome. One, it was my attire, and the other one, it was the way that I was sweating and perhaps would have intruded in their space, and he didn't want to let any hot air in or cold air out, whatever. And I started walking away, and I honestly had a smile on my face, you know, and I thought, this is rather humorous. And then I got really sad. As I was walking, now I was about a mile from where my sister lived, and people ask, well, why didn't she go to church? She maybe had tried to get in, but didn't ask her. And as I walked back, I thought, you know, I have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and that's okay. You know, if I don't go to church today, that's all right. But I kept thinking about people in places like that particular city who do try to get in, and they can't get in. I had an experience with some of our leaders in the Phoenix area. One of them owns the Phoenix Suns. His name is Jerry Colangelo. Many of the other people who are great Christian leaders, they had the Jesus Project, the Jesus Video Project for our city, and they asked if I would provide some leadership, help out in any way. And I challenged the leadership. I said, what if it works? What if this Jesus Video Project all of a sudden turns the whole city on and they start flooding the churches? Are the churches ready? What would happen? What would happen if churches who are very comfortable with their constituents got all kinds of strangers and people, as George Hunter talked about, weren't church broke? What would happen if they showed up? Would they be ready? Well, I've been thinking and pondering since that time of the behavior of churches that are more oriented to institutional models and churches that are oriented to a mission model. There are some distinguishing marks, and I've written down a few that I'd like to share with you. And the theme this afternoon is think like a missionary, act like a marketer. And experiences like this have precipitated that line of thinking. This past summer I was in Australia doing a series of lectures, and I had to meet with the Lutheran Council. The Lutheran Seminary was not particularly pleased that I was there, so I had to get permission from the authorities and had to literally go through my senior exam all over again. You know, what is your theology of grace, and what about the sacraments? Define the sacraments for, you know, I had to go through a whole grilling process before I could lecture, but I passed, you know, second time in a row. So anyway, I started thinking about this area, and Here are just a few distinctions. An institutional model, an orientation, sees power as limited. A mission sees power as unlimited. When you go in an institutional congregation, they have a seat of power, a church board or a constituent group that feel they need to give permission for everything that goes on there. And you can't do it unless you get permission. They can manipulate and control. That's an issue of control. Where one that has a mission orientation sees power as unlimited. They see their job to give away power because it's when we give away power that we receive power. So empowerment is their model. That's their goal. Secondly, an institutional orientation focuses on the organizational needs. A mission model focuses on human needs. Here again, it's the first question is, what are the needs of the organization versus what are the needs of our community or our people? And that's quite a different orientation. Thirdly, being institutionally oriented, you see ministry as that of a private family chaplaincy. Where you're about mission, you see that to be a public leader. You see the job of the pastor, the job of the leaders to be public leaders instead of private family chaplains. And when I arrived at Community Church of Joy, I was given an assignment to visit every member every year and to make sure that when they arrived in the hospital, I was there to welcome them as they checked in and to follow through and care for the flock. And believe me, I take seriously pastoral care. We did a terrible job of pastoral care a number of years ago until we found a champion who knew how to do that. His name is Mark Kiva. And I would get all kinds of complaints about people not being cared for, and that is important to me. But since he arrived, people feel loved and cared for. So, I do think that there is the orientation needs to be public leadership, that we not only react to the public, but we can actually influence. We're not called simply to impact the world, we're called to improve it. Instead of just reacting because we don't like the crime, all of the challenges, the poverty, and let's do something, let's be proactive, let's initiate. Number four, an orientation of an institutional model, they love meetings. They love to meet. And they schedule meetings to schedule meetings. I spent, I don't know how many hours of my life as a new pastor in meetings. We had church board meetings that would go four and a half hours. We had 200 people, and we had 87 in church on a Sunday, and now we have several thousand more, and our board meetings last 1 hour. Half of that's teaching, leadership development, training, and the business goes like this. When I first arrived, we had 4.5 hour congregational meetings. We had a 10-minute congregational meeting to sell our present facility and call a pastor and give me permission to sign a $10 million loan. So that took 10 minutes to take care of that. See, because a mission-oriented church loves ministry, not meetings. There's a whole different mindset if you're into meetings instead of ministry. Then there's also, I'll go through some of these more quickly. There's a past focus versus future focused. A mission is future focused. The institution is past. The best years were yesterday, those glory days of yesterday. And boy, if we could only go back, and I love what Lyle Schaller talks about, you know, most churches are geared up and ready to go and would be very effective for ministry in 1950. And whenever that comes around again, we're going to be all ready to take care of it. Well, then also there's a mindset. An institutional orientation has a scarcity mindset, and a mission has an abundance. That resources are not limited, resources are unlimited. If God calls you and tells you to go, you go. You don't wait till all the lights are green. You start out. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that tomorrow, the power of faith and the power of a dream. Also, along with that, with the scarcity mindset, the first question is, what can I get instead of what can I give? An institution focuses on status quo. Mission focuses on change and growth. Institution focuses on safety, security. Spend a lot of time dealing with those issues. And a mission center focuses on risk. The essence of faith is risk. An institutional model is set up around committees, mission, task forces. When you've served your usefulness, get rid of it. Don't exist just for the sake of existing. Exist for a significant purpose. Institutionalism has rugged individualism, where a mission, I see, has teamwork. They are committed to building great teams. A institution focuses on the tried and true, where mission focuses on the imaginative. If you're a missionary, we would talk about missionaries in foreign countries, how innovative they have to be for their just basic needs, and for instruments and, you know, some of the supplies. Well, a missionary is one that is imaginative. An institution sees itself as self-sufficient. A mission center views itself as that being that networking and collaboration is important. An institution seeks survival. A mission center seeks to thrive. An institution, and I've spoken it coming out of a Lutheran mainline background, you know, I have an appreciation for the creeds, the confessions, the sacraments. Those are values that are important. However, I see tradition not as an anchor, but as a rudder. It guides us into the future, not holding us back to the past. I see an institutional center as that of an introvert, talking to themselves and judging the world, where a mission center is a group of extroverts. They talk to the world and judge themselves. Quite different orientation. I also see that an institutional model is issue-oriented, where a mission model is relationship-oriented. An institution is rigid, organizationally rigid. A mission center is organizationally flexible. You're willing to adapt, adaptability. The institution asks why. A mission center asks why not. Institution stresses convenience. A mission stresses commitments. And finally, an institution, what the driving force is, win-lose. There has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. Even in the corporate America, the institutional model, it's the same way. But people serious about mission seek win-win. You win, I win. I win, you win. And quite different. When I was growing up, I admired missionaries. In fact, my father, being a Lutheran minister in many rural congregations in the Midwest, we would have missionaries, and I was so impressed when they would make their presentations, and I prayed that someday I would be a missionary. They were my most admired people, and I never lost that passion. In fact, God has chosen me to be a missionary in one of the great unchurched, non-Christian areas in the whole world. It's right in Phoenix, Arizona. And we have on any given Sunday maybe 20-25% of our people in church. And what an opportunity for mission. So when I received, I sensed God's call, the picture I had in mind was that of a missionary. And what I liked about Community Church of Joy, even though they were that congregation had a 2.5-year existence, it was still on mission support. It was a mission center, a mission congregation. And finally, we were able to raise the money and pay back our denomination. It was $272,000. And that was in 1979. We paid them off. And many of our leaders said, boy, that's great. Now we're no longer a mission. I said, boy, that's not true. We will always be a mission. And if we ever forget that, we're out of business. We're done. So I take seriously the being in mission. I want to show you a clip, and we're going to reverse. I told you that let's go to the Sister Act clip instead because of time, and I'll skip the Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean goes to church. How many have seen that? Yeah, well, that's just entertainment. That has no place here. You know. All right, I just thought I'd say that. Anyway, yeah, you can't see back here, but I'd like you to take a look at Whoopi Goldberg has entered the institutional epicenter in this particular inner city area. And be trying to get them to think more mission-minded inadvertently, and not that Whoopi Goldberg was this great missionary, but the scene here is the transformation that takes place from the institutional model to the mission model, and then I'm going to talk about some specifics after this about how to think like a missionary, and then I'll wrap up with act like a marketer. So let's take a look at Whoopi.
I mean, I'm just starting to get the hang of this. I mean, look, I'm not going to endanger anyone or anything else. I swear. What about forgiveness? Isn't that what you preach? There's got to be something around here that I can do that's not going to chip my nails or annoy anybody.
You're right, Mary Clarence. To err is human, to forgive divine. You may stay. But I shall restrict your activities to a single task.
What's that?
Singing. You will join the choir.
Choir? No.
You will sleep and you will sing. That will be your task until you leave.
No, the choir? I mean, have you heard them?
The choir, Mary Clarence.
Is this the choir rehearsal?
Sure is. Come on in, sing a spell.
Soprano or alto?
Whatever.
Thanks. Oh. I've seen those. 214. Clarence, are you with us?
I don't know this one. I better sit this one out. Excuse me.
Reverend Mother says Mary Clarence has a background in music.
Really, Mary Clarence? Were you a choir mistress?
Sort of freelance.
Freelance? Really? Oh. You don't think I see? You think I took vows yesterday? I know what you're up to. You and Reverend Mother.
What?
You're a ringer. She brought you here to replace me. Out with the old.
Oh, could you help us, Mary Clarence? Mary Lazarus, you're terrific, but we could really use some help.
Please, you've heard us.
We're terrible.
Well, there's a word for this. Mutiny. So, Mary Clarence, you think you can do better? I believe I'd like to see that. Go ahead, sister. Make them sing.
Okay. Where are the basses? Oh, you should be over here. And the altos? Where are you? Sister, why don't you join them? And sopranos, where are you? Oh, you've got to come down this way. All right. Basses, I want you to give me a D. Altos, I want you to do a third above that. Give me an F sharp. And sopranos, give me an A. Let me have Sister Alma play it one time so we all know what we're going to do, and we'll go from there. Sister, will you give me those notes, please? Okay. On three. One, two, three. Very, very nice. Sister, would you come over here, please? Just slide right in here for me, please. Right here. That's a powerful instrument you have there. But I think it's probably a good idea if we bring you down out of the rafters. I mean, everybody wants to be close to God. I'm just not sure you can do it vocally. Okay, so I need you to sing an octave below where you've been singing. And Sister Mary Robert? Could you come stand over here, please? Yeah, come on over. I noticed that you're moving your mouth, but nothing's coming out. So I'd like to just hear you by yourself, if you don't mind. Sister Alma, could you give me an A, please? Alma! Check your battery. Give me an A, please. Okay. Try this. Close your eyes. Visualize yourself in a room full of people, lots of silverware, people dropping stuff, talking loud, drunks, women with trays going, "What are you gonna have?" Your voice has to carry over the din. You have to get up over all of that to be heard in the back of the room where I'm sitting, listening, straining to hear you. Okay? Keep that in your mind when we do this. Sister. We call that an A with an attitude. That's what you need. You have to put attitude in what you're saying. You have to think about what you're singing. It's not just quacking. This is rejoicing. You are singing to the Lord. Let's review those notes again and see if we can put it together. Sister? Basses, altos, sopranos. On three. One, two, three.
Oh, we did it. We actually sang.
Yeah, you sang a chord for 2 seconds. The next thing you have to learn how to do is listen to each other. Mm. That's a big key. Big key. You must listen to each other if you're going to be a group.
I knew that.
It's Mary Lazarus. As soon as I walked in the door, I knew that you knew this. Now, you're somebody who's into hard work and discipline, aren't you?
Oh, of course. I'm a nun. 4 popes now.
4? Wow. How often do they rehearse?
Twice a week, a couple hours.
Not enough. I mean, listen to them. They really need a lot of work. They got to rehearse every day.
she's good. Well, do you think they really could get better?
I don't know. They're pretty raw.
Wet behind the ears.
Oh, please, let us try.
This is going to be hell.
Tell me about it. La 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 la.
Welcome this Sunday morning, O ye few, but faithful. The choir, I'm told, has elected a new director, Sister Mary Clarence, who will lead them in Hail, Holy Queen.
More like Vegas, you know, get some butts in the seats.
And what next?
Popcorn?
curtain calls. This is not a theater or a casino.
Yeah, but that's the problem, see? People like going to theaters and they like going to casinos, but they don't like coming to church. Why? Because it's a drag. But we could change all that. See, we could pack this joint.
Through blasphemy? You have corrupted the entire choir.
Excuse me.
How can you say that? I work my butt off with these women. They've given up their free time to do this, and they're good.
I mean, sister, we could rock this place.
Out of the question. As of tomorrow, Mary Lazarus resumes her leadership of the choir.
Come in!
Reverend Mother, I just wanted to congratulate you. I haven't enjoyed Mass this much in years. What a marvelous program. Innovative, inspiring. You're to be commended. I can't wait till next Sunday when the choir performs again. Did you see the people walk right in from the street? That music, that heavenly music. Reverend Mother, it called to them.
It did?
I must tell the Archbishop. I'll send him a personal letter describing your efforts. Your bold new fight to keep your little convent alive.
And you must also include this. This is something she would never tell you herself because this is the kind of woman she is. Sisters, she wants us to go out into the neighborhood and meet the people.
Oh, this woman.
Oh, bless her. Oh, there are so many problems out there that we could maybe help with. I mean, that's why many of us became nuns. Oh, it's really marvelous, Reverend Mother.
There's a lot we could do for him besides pray, sister.
You're a pioneer.
Monsignor, surely you realize how dangerous this neighborhood is.
And you will face that danger head on. As if I could stop you.
You couldn't.
You have my complete support in this matter. Anything you could do to revitalize this neighborhood would be a blessing.
Don't you just love her?
Love.
me read something from the Bible in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter. The writer was one of the greatest missionaries that we have ever really known. The Apostle Paul, when I am with people whose faith is weak, I live as they do to win them. I do everything I can to win everyone I possibly can. I do all this for the good news because I want to share in its blessings. Those are some powerful words. And to become truly engaged in mission is quite a commitment. It's a different orientation. It's a different way of thinking. It's a different way of behaving. So much of what we saw here was the transformation to connect the voice of God with the culture. So much of what we're talking about is not theological, it's cultural. We're not trying to change the Bible. We're not trying to change the truth. We're simply changing methods. As we worship together and truly become a mission center, we're not throwing out substance. We're transforming that mission center. There are different styles. And I just think, as we take this seriously, that it's going to require a new mindset as we are serious about mission, being in mission. So there are a few things, our thought pattern. First of all, to think like a missionary, we need to realize that an effective missionary does not have just the right set of circumstances, but they have the right set of thoughts, right set of thinking, the right mindset. A missionary thinks, win. There are people who need to be connected with Jesus Christ. When I came to Joy, my commitment was to reach out beyond that cozy crowd and connect with the community. I spent a lot of time meeting with people in the community who were not connected in any way to the church. They had no faith. And it was really exciting. Just last week, in fact, last Sunday, one of the gentlemen I connected with in 1978, I have been praying. I've been thinking, when? And been praying for him in my prayer journal. How many years is that? It's almost 20 years. Last week we had a conversation. Something tragic happened in his family and his life. And he came to church for the first Sunday, last Sunday. I can't tell you, it takes a lot of patience and prayer. But there's no greater reward. I think of the difficulty that we face. I think of people like John Wesley. As John Wesley was serious about being in mission, listen to some things that happened in his life. I love this. Sunday morning, May 5th, preached in St. Anne's, was asked not to come back anymore. Said, get out and stay out. The next Sunday, May 12th, preached at St. Jude's. Can't go back there either. Sunday p.m., May 12th, preached at St. George's. Kicked out again. Sunday a.m., May 19th, the following Sunday, in the morning, preached at St. somebody else's. Deacons called a special meeting and told me I could not return. Sunday evening, May 19th, preached on the street, kicked off the street. The next Sunday, May 26, preached in a meadow, chased out of the meadow as a bull was turned loose during the services. You may have some of those in your churches. Sunday, June 2nd, the next Sunday, preached out on the edge of the town, kicked off the highway, Sunday night, June 2nd. Afternoon service, preached in a pasture. 10,000 people came to listen to the gospel. John Wesley traveled about 250,000 miles on his horse and because the church was for the intellectually elite, he wanted to find a way to really, truly incarnate the gospel and make the practical, relevant application of the gospel to people's lives. And so he used tombstones as pulpits. He got his brother Charles, and they took some of the popular folk tunes of the day, tunes that were even used in bar rooms, and took the gospel and put the words of the gospel to those tunes. And the world has never been the same. Yeah. Think win. Think about winning people for Jesus Christ. Certainly we know it is through the power of the Spirit that the transformation takes place. But what do you think about? You think win. You think about winning a world that is not connected to Christ or the church. You think about putting their needs ahead of the needs of the churched people when you think win. My assignment as to earn my keep, I was supposed to do, everyone in our church on our church board had a wonderful plan for my life. And they wanted me to earn my salary, to earn my keep, to do what they thought you should do, what every religious preacher does. But when I came to tell them that my passion, my heart, was for people who were not connected with Christ or the church, that we had to do things differently. We had to think about them. In fact, their needs took precedent over the needs of the people there. I ended up going through a lot of pain, many nights with tears. And I know many of you have been through that or may be going through that. But I believe that we don't have a choice, that that's what it's about. And as God came in the person of Jesus, the incarnation, that's a theology of incarnation. That's making the practical application of God's truth. So we think when. Secondly, think as a visionary. The Bible tells us without a vision, the people perish. I received this little statement on vision. If your vision is for a year, plant wheat. If your vision is for 10 years, plant trees. If your vision is for a lifetime, plant people. What business are we in? A visionary sees that we're in the people business. It's true that vision is glue. When I talk about vision, I talk about a picture of a preferred future given by God based on an accurate understanding of God, ourselves, and our circumstances. We think of a vision that I believe what keeps a community of faith together is vision. And people talk about, well, how in the world can you go through? We're in the process of relocating. We have developed our 14-acre campus fully, and there are some Sundays we have 100 cars drive away, they can't get in. So we bought a couple hundred acres, we bought an orange grove, we're in the process of developing a mission center. We call it a beachhead for mission. And as we're going through all of this transition, Lyle Schaller had some encouraging words to me. He was consulting us a number of years ago when we were making the initial plans and preparation. He said, your chances of failure are greater than your chances of success. But I have found that what has kept us together is the power of vision. A picture of a preferred future given by God that has been entrusted by God. It's not a scheme. It's a vision given by God based on an accurate understanding of who God is, who we are, and our circumstances, our context, our community. Well, then, as a missionary, we think strategically. I don't know if you picked up, how many of you read the USA Today? Did any of you get a copy of that? In the Life section, there's a section, Mormons on Mission to Grow. You talk about people who think strategically. They are some of the greatest strategic thinkers in the whole world, and one of their greatest heroes is Stephen Covey. Covey has done a remarkable job of training many of their leaders, many of their people, has had a significant impact. And I love a lot of the things you can discover from people like Stephen Covey. But one of the things when they talk about strategy, they talk about the television blitz and then targeting some of those people and then zeroing in, making that visit and engaging these people. There were other interesting, for those of you may want to read this, about how they put the undergarments that have been blessed to protect you, and there's just a lot of stuff in here that's quite interesting. Nevertheless, I think that Christians have to think seriously about being strategic. If you're a missionary, you think strategically. One of the things that I had to discover very quickly as a young minister was that we had no idea where we were going and what was next. We'd get together at a meeting and plan to get through that next month. And it wasn't until we developed a 1-3-5-10-year strategic plan. And the more focused, the more specific that plan was, the more likely it was to become realized. And we took from our worship, we knew a number of years ago that we would diversify in worship. When Dr. Hunter talked about offering different worship expressions, we do that. We have a particular target. We plan those strategically. We plan our adult education strategically. We plan children's ministry strategically. One area that I encourage you, and at another time and another place, I'd love to talk to you about this, but how do you fund your vision? I know of very few people serious about mission that have a business plan. You've really thought through. You've thought strategically. You've planned carefully and effectively. If you're going to survive in the 21st century and you haven't worked on these plans and this process, it's imperative. It's essential that takes place. So you think strategically. You also think imaginatively. Imagination is one of God's greatest gifts. I just turned in my manuscript to Harper Zondervan on Be Your Own Creative Coach. It's a book on imagination. Information is limited. Imagination is unlimited. And when you think like a missionary, I talked about it before, you think through your imagination. You pour your life through your imagination that we can set the world aflame. Well, then also you think magnificently. Lee Strobel, you'll be hearing him in a few days, has written this book, God's Outrageous Claims. In your thought process, he writes from a person who had not been connected with Christ or the church. And she wrote these words, "Do you know, do you understand that you represent Jesus to me? Do you know, do you understand that when you treat me with gentleness, it raises the question in my mind that maybe Christ is gentle too. Maybe he isn't someone who laughs when I hurt. Do you know, do you understand, when you listen to my questions and don't laugh, I think, well, what if Jesus was interested in me too? Do you know, do you understand that when I hear you talk about arguments and conflicts and scars from your past, I think, maybe I am just a regular person instead of a bad, no good little girl who deserves abuse. If you care, I think maybe he cares. And then there's a flame of hope that burns inside of me, and for a while I'm afraid to breathe because it might go out. Do you know, do you understand that your words are his words? Your face, his face. Please, be who you say you are. Please, God, don't let this be another trick. Please let this be real. Please. Do you know, do you understand that you represent Jesus to me? You think magnificently. You allow the power of the Holy Spirit to flow through and are committed to becoming intimate with Jesus Christ. Well, then I'd like to talk very quickly and focus on, well, then act like a marketer. I had a video, a Disney training video that I was going to show you. We don't have time. Time goes faster in Chicago, I think, than other places. But here are some things that we think like a missionary, act like a marketer. Here's some things that in our behavior, in our acting out, in our living of each day. Number one, and I'll give you seven of these very quickly. Act quickly to serve the needs of your people. I think the speed of our organizations, we need to become more efficient. Of course, we have to become more excellent and effective, but we have to become more efficient. There are so many committees and boards that bog down. If we see a need, we cannot respond. There is not that empowerment on the front line to be about ministry, to engage in meaningful ministry, and we have to go back up the chain and get the money and get the permission and, you know, do all of that organizational stuff to make it a reality. So we need to act quickly to serve the needs of the customers. And are you streamlined? How about organizationally? Are you ready to respond? And are your people ready to respond? Are they trained and equipped and prepared? Secondly, we need to act purposefully. One of the things that we just had a survey done, 89% of our people know what our purpose is. They know what we're in business for. They know what our mission statement is. 89%. They said the average church in America has about a 12% factor. They have no idea. They don't know what it's about. Our mission is very clear, that all may know Jesus Christ and become a responsible member of the church. We share his love with joy, inspired by the Holy Spirit. We act purposefully. Then number three, we act with anticipation and expectation. I call this the Wayne Gretzky approach. Wayne Gretzky was asked, what's the key to his success? He said, well, most people go where the puck is. I go where the puck will be. And you plan ahead, you anticipate, you have expectations, you're ready when people come to welcome and encourage and teach and help them grow and nurture, and you're ready to place them in mission and ministry when they come and want a place to serve. Then number four, you act like a leader. We have five non-negotiables in leadership. When we talked about that all may know Jesus Christ and become a responsible member of the church, what is a responsible member? Well, there are five things. And if you're on our staff, if you're on our church board, if you're a teacher, if you're a leader, whatever, these are the five things. Number one, a commitment to regular worship. When I came, we had many of our leaders who didn't worship regularly. Number two, you're involved in a discipline of daily prayer and devotions. Then number three, you are committed to growth. And congratulations to you. You know, leaders are learners. You've heard that. But you're committed to grow, and they are committed to a Bible study, retreats, workshops, seminars, whatever. Number four, you're committed to tithing. Those who argue most about money give the least. And that is essential, especially in leadership. You can be a participant, but you can't be a leader. And because you can't ask people to do something you're not willing to do. If you're going on a campaign and haven't made a significant sacrifice, it's tough to ask others. And then number five, you're involved in mission. I believe that the greatest people in the world have big hearts. Winners have big hearts. You know, Kerry Strug talked about that. Winners have one thing in common, they have big hearts. How do you get a big heart? You get involved in mission, in the sores of society, whether you're serving in a soup kitchen, you're pounding on a home Habitat for Humanity, whatever it might be. Then number five, act responsibly. By responsibly, you need to find out if what you're doing is working. Instead of just because you've always done it that way before, keep doing the things you've always been doing, and if it is working, great, improve it. If it's not, get rid of it. There are too many sacred cows. Bill Eason talks all about that. But investigate, are you communicating with people you think you're communicating with? I have people who are not churched evaluate my messages. If I want to speak to them, they evaluate. So our teachers, all the people who are involved in ministry, we evaluate for improvement. It's this whole total quality management process of continuous improvement. And then number six, act like a coach. You train. I don't know how many hours you spend training your people, but I love what Zig Ziglar said. What's worse than training someone and losing them is not to train them and keep them. So I think the importance of training. And then number seven, act the behavior as a marketer transformationally. That if anyone is in Christ, they're a new creation. The old is gone. The new has come. That's really what it's about. That's what we're in the business to be about. Well, it says, that's it. Time to quit. Did you see that back there? So, thanks. I've been watching the 10-9-8, so thank you very much. Realities, you cannot do it quickly. I think about maybe 5, 6, 7 that really started some of the noticeable foundation was put into place. But I think it's important, number one, that you, as a transformational leader, get intimate and stay intimate with Jesus Christ. And that's non-negotiable. And I can't emphasize that enough. It's very important. Secondly, that you make it clear what your vision, your mission, you make it clear what it's about. You go public with what's in your heart, what God's putting in your heart, and be a leader. Don't operate by consensus. Operate with commitment. And stand up, not to jam it down people's throat, but to take a stand for what you believe in your heart you've been called to lead in mission. And then also training leaders. I think it's so important. As the leaders go, so goes the church. And leadership development, equipping, and recruiting. I think it was just important to outgrow some of the critics. Yeah. And... what's nice is to be able to stay in a place for a while. I've been in Phoenix almost 20 years, about 19 and a half. And people start taking it seriously after about 20 years. They think that maybe it's going to work. So those are just some quick...
Excellent.
One more?
One more, and then remember we get to pick up tomorrow. Yes.
I don't know that much about what happened to Katie Church George before you came. I apologize for that.
Yes.
How did you turn the corner on getting them to not grow sacred cows? Did you have to make a lot of change there? And if not, then how did you keep them from day one begin to say, we're not even going to grow the cow? We're going to...
Okay, the question was making some new and substantial change, really, how was that triggered? And I just would say that you have to offer new, you have to demonstrate and model new opportunities. I continue to offer the traditional worship expression, but then introduced an alternative worship expression. And didn't kill. And with the ladies group, we had three ladies in our group. They had squatters' rights, and no one wanted to come. And they were really grumpy and, wouldn't let people in. So if we wanted to do something significant, we offered an alternative. We started a group called Life with Spice. Well, we ended up growing that to almost 200. So what you do, you offer some new, exciting alternatives. You try to love and value people. I think it's important to establish a climate where people know they're loved unconditionally, non-judgmentally. If our business is grace, we better be gracious. And we can do that with grace, without destroying people, valuing the integrity of humankind, but then being bold and daring and standing up for what you know God has called you to lead. So, thanks.
Thank you. Wow. Wow. Okay.